take us back prior to 1965, talking about the history of the libraries just in the various counties before the consolidation and before the creation of Mid-Continent, basically.
Sure. I mean, it's a long story. And one of the interesting things that Mid-Continent decided to do was to declare its birthday to be 1965, because to be completely honest, we could have declared our birthday to be a number of different dates depending upon when we wanted to declare us coming together. The first library service that is now part of Mid-Continent Public Library that was ongoing and that we have record and that we can show was around the entire time, what is the Excelsior Springs branch. And the Excelsior Springs branch actually started off as a library that was known as the Citizens Improvement Association Library. And this sort of thing was pretty common, sort of subscription libraries where people of a certain means in communities around the turn of the last century would get together and do certain acts. Sometimes they would have soup kitchens. In this case, the people of Excelsior Springs decided to put together a library. And that occurred before the turn of the century. I mean, the CIA, as it's often abbreviated, the CIA Library.
Wow. Yeah.
Was around well before 1900, 1880 or so, is from what we can tell. About that same time, if you know your library history, your larger library history at all, you know that Andrew Carnegie was making grants to communities to build libraries. And over time, the people of Excelsior Springs were able to get their act together enough and get the money in for a grant. And I think they got perhaps one of the last Carnegie grants. I've never actually looked into the history of the Carnegie Foundation and all of that, but I believe the cornerstone on the building is 1916 or something like that. So it's pretty late in the game. And the Excelsior Springs branch looks nothing like a traditional Carnegie building. If you've been in a Carnegie building, they all sort of have similar characteristics. This looks nothing like that. But the building itself is still in existence. It's on Broadway, just further down. My car, I'm kind of twisted around a little bit. I think it's to the east because the roads are twisty in Excelsior Springs.
Yeah.
And I think it's to the east of the Hall of Waters on Broadway. You just go straight down Broadway and there's a little brick building, and it's had many different lives. I'm not sure exactly what it's doing right now, but it's still in existence and still standing, still a public service building there in Excelsior Springs. The sort of the next line of demarcation in terms of library development in Greater Kansas City came with the WPA, the Works Projects Administration. There were many WPA libraries that were set up all over the United States, you know, during the Great Depression. And basically, they were a jobs program. They really didn't care if you had any books in the library. What really mattered is, were you hiring people so that they weren't unemployed? Because the unemployment rate was like 25%
at
that
tough times back then.
Yeah, right.
Separate priorities.
Right. And so the idea was to sort of develop jobs any way you could. And in many of our communities, WPA libraries sprung up. We know that we identified one in Blue Springs, for example, but there were a lot of them in Platte County, including northern Platte County, in towns like Camden Point, Dearborn, Edgerton, Weston. And these WPA libraries managed to keep going even after the funding ended. They managed to keep moving right along. And so then in the 1940s, the Missouri General Assembly passed enabling legislation that would allow counties to create library districts. And it was pretty unique and pretty progressive for the day. Basically, what they did is they said that you could go in and create a library district, like a road district or a fire district or something like that, and be more or less independent. They would have oversight by the county at a certain level, and you could create these. And larger unit of service, the idea is they would operate a lot better than a city library, or I guess that's really the only other type of library there was at that time, is a city library. And there were quite a few. Kansas City Public Library, for example, had been around since the early 1900s, late 1800s. Lots of city. Yeah, North Kansas City Library was in existence at that time. In our footprint, the Frank Hughes Library in Liberty was around, and it was established in the late 1930s. And of course, the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs. So what they discovered is these, particularly in small towns, they just couldn't get the economy of scale, you know, to get up and running. And so they created this county library enabling legislation. Well, because Platte County had all these WPA libraries that were still sort of functioning and doing well, they kind of had a pretty decent infrastructure in place if they wanted to go for a library. And so now the county got their act together and started trying to figure out how to do this. And this is late 1941 by the time they start getting everything together. And it ends up that the levy campaign, as I recall, is like right on the eve of World War II. And it's, in fact, it's really interesting. If you go through a lot of the Mid-Continent archives, you'll find some of the stuff, some of the literature. And they're, you know, people are aware America's going to be at war at some time. And so there's editorials in the newspaper talking about, you know, we don't have time to fund books. We need to be buying bullets and guns because we're going to be going to war. But it did pass. If the levy election would have been held at the next election cycle after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, because I think it was in November is when the election was. If it would have been held after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, it probably wouldn't have passed. Yeah.
Timing.
Right. And so because of that, and because of the subsequent war, the Platte County Library was the first county library in the state of Missouri, and the only county library in the state of Missouri for a long time, because people were really focused on other things, obviously. Mm-hmm. After the war, people really got their act together around taking advantage of this new county library district legislation. And so that occurred next in our footprint with the Jackson County Library. So as I'd mentioned, the Kansas City Public Library existed, and it was a department of the school district. So wherever the Kansas City School District existed, the Kansas City Library existed. But outside of that, so Independence, Blue Springs, Lee Summit, none of those places actually had tax-supported, ongoing libraries. Some of them had WPA libraries, but they'd folded during the war. And so shortly after the war, Jackson County gets their act together, and they create a Jackson County Library with headquarters in Independence. And actually, if you know much about Jackson County politics, this isn't at all surprising. There's a lot of things where there's sort of government in Kansas City and then government in the rest of Jackson County. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two courthouses in Jackson County. So the idea that there's two library districts in Jackson County, particularly in 1947, 46, isn't that shocking or surprising at all. Cass County, and I don't remember exactly when Cass County came on, but they would have developed sometime around that same ballpark shortly after the war. I'm sure we'll talk more about Cass County a little bit later on, but at one point, Cass County was part of the Mid-Continent Public Library Service. And so they developed as a county library sometime right after the war as well. But then sort of the next big thing for Mid-Continent occurred in 1965. And at that point, in 1965, several community leaders in Clay County got together and started looking around. As I mentioned, there was a municipal library in North Kansas City. There was one in Liberty called the Frank Hughes Library, and then there was the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs. But all the rest of Kansas City North didn't have library service. And at this particular time, the first ring suburbs of Gladstone, for example, in fact, Gladstone was one of the real pushers behind all of this, was growing very, very fast. I mean, that's where the big shopping mall was, and it's where all the interstates and everything were going through, but no library service. And so those folks got together and started talking about the idea of putting together a Clay County Library District. And one of the things that discovered actually recently speaking with Mac Porter was a board member of the original Clay County Library and still alive and kicking. And Mac actually told us some really interesting stories about the early days, that he's actually a distant cousin of a Jackson County board member. Joe Herndon was his name. And Joe Herndon is actually the name of the Raytown branch, is named after
and
Joe Herndon.
And he has a service center out there in Raytown, like a vocational school.
Vo-Tech school, right. Yeah. So Joe and Mac were cousins, distant cousins, and they started talking to each other about, you know, Mac was on this brand new library board and didn't know anything about it. He started crunching the numbers and realized if we actually do this thing, you know, we might be able to pay for our librarian, but that'd be about it. I mean, again, the issue of economy of scale creeped in. And so he got on the phone with his distant cousin and said, you know, how do we actually go about doing this? He said, well, you know, we got a bunch of books in our warehouse, got a bunch of surplus furniture. If there's a way we could figure out how to operate together, you know, we might be able to get you up and running faster. And so several people have talked to me about these early days. These early days are really interesting because the documentation around them is really sketchy because there was no Missouri Sunshine Law back then. So a lot of the meetings took place in people's houses and they weren't required to take copious notes the way we do now. But the idea was that Clay County would establish a library district. And as soon as they established the library district, they would enter into an agreement with Jackson County to create a cooperative operating system that would be known as the Mid-Continent Public Library Service. And that's exactly what happened. The levy went in and the enabling levy and operating enabling legislation and the operating levy went into effect in Clay County, and it passed, and it did not pass well in northern Clay County, in Smithville and Kearney. It passed overwhelmingly well down south in the other areas. And so one of the things politically that the leaders decided to do, John Ferguson, the library director, told me about this, is that there was a real feeling that there was a real fear, particularly from the people in the northern area, that their money would go elsewhere. They wouldn't really see library service. And they would, and that Jackson County would make good on their promises in terms of operations.
So there was a lot of trust issues back
then? Trust issues back then. You know what? Those trust issues still exist today. I mean, throughout other parts of our country and other parts of our library district. And so to make the people understand that they meant what they said and said what they meant, the first libraries that got established in Clay County were in Smithville and Kearney. They got established, I think, less than a year after operations, and they just rented storefronts and got them up and running. And then they went back and started working on North Oak and Gladstone and the Antioch Shopping Center and places like that, where the levy was much more successful. But people understood that they had to bring along their, you know, I hate to use the term, but in those days, their country cousins, you know, bring them along so that they could understand that this was really going to be a good thing. And so that was 65. And then before then, backtracking just a bit, in the early 1960s, actually, I think it's 1961 or 1962, Jim Leathers became the library director. I never met him. I've only seen pictures. Read a lot about him, though. And one of the things that he did when he came to town was the idea of creating an economy of scale. So at one point, the Platte County Library was without a library director. And so he went to Platte County and said, hey, you know, if you would pay us a flat fee based on your inventory, basically, is how it worked out, we will provide processing services of your books and accounting services and operations and all of that. And I think it was something like a nickel a book or something like that based on their inventory. And so that was a whole lot better deal than what they were going to be getting before. And so Platte County signed on. And this was just a handshake agreement, essentially. And really, this type of library arrangement still exists in Missouri. They're known as regional libraries. One of the nearest regional libraries to us is, well, one of the nearest big regional libraries to us is Daniel Boone Regional Library in Columbia, which is a combination of two different county libraries and a city library, and it's all based on a handshake, which was kind of the way ours was done too. And that occurred and worked out really well and was part of the basis of the creation of the Mid-Continent Public Library Service. You know, we knew we could do this, and it's one of the reasons why Clay County was willing to sign on to do this. Cass County actually had the exact same operation that was occurring, and I believe that was also in the mid to late 1960s that they'd signed on, sort of on the per volume service agreement. And so by 1965 and 1966, Mid-Continent Public Library was comprised of Jackson, Clay, Platte, and Cass County, not including the Kansas City Public Library District, not including the North Kansas City Public Library District, the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs, or the Frank Hughes Library District. So in some ways bigger than we are now, and in some ways not as big as we are right now. Those are sort of the early days, and we can move into phase two where we incorporate all of those if you'd like.
Is there any reason why Kansas City Public, because if you look at a map of service areas, mm-hmm. Kansas City Public is its own little island, and mm-hmm. we're kind of around them. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason why they have remained? Is it because it's a city ran thing, or is it because I just find that interesting that we are, and they just continue to be their own. And that's what we get a lot from customers is, where's your Waldo branch, or where's your Plaza library? What's the phone number there? And we have to explain that's a separate set. We give them the number, but we have to explain that it's a different service or a different system. So is there any reason why they have always been separate from what we do?
Yeah. I mean, historically, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, one thing to do is to go back to 1965 at the time of the merger, and really around the time period, you actually see Jim Leathers making a really strong push to merge Mid-Continent and the Kansas City, well, at that point, Jackson County Library and the Kansas City Public Library. And basically what you get at that particular time is sort of a get away from me, kid, don't bother me response from Kansas City Public. Keep in mind, at that particular time, they were a little short of 100 years old. You know, they had a long history. They were also part of a school district. I mean, they were actually part of the school district, like a department of the school district, not an independent library district. So you had to work through the school district to try to figure out how were you going to merge a library district into a school district. And actually at that point, sort of the dominant partner in the relationship definitely would have been Kansas City Public. So it's really questionable how you would merge these public library entities in Clay and Jackson County and Platt County into a school district library. And so that, you know, that's what it looked like in the 1960s. By the 1970s, you end up with the desegregation and all the things that are happening with the Kansas City school district, which has an effect on the Kansas City Library District as well. And over time, Mid-Continent continues to grow. Kansas City Public sort of begins to shrink a little bit and starts having some funding issues. And at that point, it might have been a situation where Mid-Continent would have been the dominant partner in the relationship. But Mid-Continent at that particular point wasn't interested in merging, in part because their structure was still screwed up. They were still part of the school district. And at that particular, I mean, growing up in Eastern Jackson County, I can tell you that, I mean, if there was any initiative involving the Kansas City School District that also involved a partnership with Eastern Jackson, the citizenry wouldn't have allowed for it. I mean, you know, everything was just so tainted around busing and forced desegregation and all of that, that it wouldn't have made any difference. So the next thing that happens is Kansas City Public sort of spins out into their own library district type, and they're what's known as an urban library district. They've got their own section of the statute and the Missouri Revised Statutes, and really the urban library district law was based on the consolidated library district law. It just changes words every so often, and that's about it. And so their structure is very, very similar to our structure now. And so there was some talk at, I'm trying to remember when this was, early 90s, I think, about the idea of consolidation again. And this time this time it really come full circle. Kansas City Public was pushing really hard for consolidation with Mid-Continent. And Mid-Continent wasn't interested. In part, we were in the middle of our building program. And we were culturally, we were just two totally different libraries. I mean, in terms of how we thought, how we provided service, just totally, totally different. Also, at that particular time, Mid-Continent really didn't have any urban libraries per se. I mean, I think you could argue that based on definition, we have two, maybe three urban libraries in our library district now. In the early 90s, we didn't. And so basically what we'd be doing is bringing in an urban library into a mostly suburban and rural library district. So culturally, there would have been all kinds of issues, not just amongst our users, but also in the leadership culture and all of that. When Crosby became the library director over at Kansas City Public, I was assistant director, I think, at that. Yeah, I was assistant director at that time. And he and Dick Wilding sat down and talked a lot about, you know, what past histories and, you know, how are we going to move forward and all that. And Crosby saw it real quickly that Kansas City Public was serving a different clientele than Mid-Continent. And so the best thing for us to do, at least for right now, is for Kansas City Public to operate as they operate. We operate as we operate, and then we do everything we can to eliminate barriers of service so that people don't really see the barriers, but that we understand that we have a library, they have a library, and we also don't try to reinvent the wheel. So, I mean, for example, we're setting in the Midwest Genealogy Center today, and one of the first things that we talked about. I mean, they were trying to do genealogy work over there, but we had them beat. We had them beat dead to rights, and there was no way that they were ever going to create a collection like ours, let alone why should they create a collection like ours just, you know, 15 miles down the road. And so there was an agreement. They're not going to do genealogy. So if somebody comes in and wants to get beyond who is my grandfather, they're going to send them here. Likewise, we're not really going to try to do local history because of the Missouri Valley Room. The Missouri Valley Room, about a 150-year-old archive of the local history of the greater Kansas City area. While it makes sense for us to have some local history in our buildings, we're not going to try to create a comprehensive local history. So if people come, and they have, people have come to us with great archives and said, we would like you to put these in the genealogy center. And we look at it, it's not really a family history, it's really a local history. And so we direct them to the Missouri Valley Room at that point. And so it's been a real strong cooperation at this point. And we continue to cooperate. I mean, there's at least, I mean, I can't really talk about them, but there's at least two really important initiatives that we are considering undertaking right now that on the verge of being able to talk about, that is a all on cooperation that back in the day, back, you know, when I first started 25 years ago or so, and that we would have never wanted to cooperate with Kansas City Public. So I don't know if that fully explains it, but I mean, what it really boils down to today is that we serve two very distinctly different clienteles. And so the idea is to cooperate and decrease and lower the thresholds of entry so that, you know, somebody from 75th and Brookside finds themselves at Redbridge. You know, we set it up so that they can start using our library services just as easy as, you know, somebody from the Redbridge neighborhood finds themselves downtown. So
do you find that being kind of the norm, even just nationwide, that libraries are becoming more cooperative? You talk about Kansas City Public back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
No, we're not going to merge with you.
Right.
But now it seems libraries are more cooperative with one another. Kind of we're all in the same basket at this point in 2015.
Yeah. Yes and no. I mean, it's really interesting in terms of how, I think a lot of it has to do with how big and how equal the library systems are with one another. So when you get to places like Pittsburgh, for example, I mean, there's obviously the Carnegie Library of Pittsburgh that a lot of people know about and have heard about. But there's also, I've heard something like in the neighborhood of 30 independent library systems surrounding that library system. And, you know, yeah. And so a huge amount of potential to cooperate, but it's really hard because getting, you know, 30 people to the table, particularly when you have one sort of, you know, 800-pound gorilla and then 30 little tiny, I'm not sure what would be the right simian for that. It makes it really hard for them to cooperate on an equal term. I really think that what we've got going here is unique. I mean, there have been times where CHEPTO, she's the chief operating officer, deputy director there. She and I have done several presentations on the national level about how Mid-Continent and Kansas City Public cooperate with each other, how we look for ways to cooperate, programs that we've done in terms of cooperation. And it's crazy. I mean, those rooms will be, well, they won't be packed, but they'll be, you know, half to two thirds full with people trying to figure out how do I work better with my neighboring library system and things like that. So I really do think that the level of cooperation that we have is unique. And I think that goes back to the leaders, frankly, the leaders of Mid-Continent. I mean, that the Jim Leathers, John Ferguson, people like that understood economy of scale mattered. I ran across a speech that Leathers gave in the early 1960s. It's in our archives, where he talked about the arbitrary political lines that do nothing but harm us, essentially. And we've got to start ignoring these arbitrary political lines. He was talking about, you know, the arbitrary political line between Blue Springs and Independence and things like that, which I wholeheartedly agree. But I also think he could have just as easily been talking about the arbitrary political lines between Kansas City, between the state line and, you know, Mid-Continent and the Johnson County Library, who is sort of our third partner in crime. We enjoy cooperating with them as much as we can. And again, that, I mean, we are political subdivisions over here on the Missouri side. On their side, they're a division of county government. But it, you know, to us, it just doesn't matter. We're going to figure out a way to cooperate with each other. So I think it depends on your environment in some communities, cooperation comes off easier. In some communities, it's not as easy. Even us, I mean, you know, this entire conversation around cooperation, I've left out, you know, North Kansas City. I haven't been talking about North Kansas City. And it's because, unfortunately, lots of times North Kansas City, you know, Vicky is the library director there. I mean, sometimes she comes in and she sees, you know, me and Crosby and, you know, we're the 800-pound gorillas and, you know, and, but the thing is that we understand that she's providing a great service. And so we do invite her to meetings and we do get her input and we do involve her in terms of courier and things like that. So because, cooperation and collaboration is in our DNA, particularly Mid-Continent's DNA, we look out for other opportunities to do that, whether it's with a big partner like Kansas City Public or a smaller partner like North Kansas City. We really try not to compete as much as we can with private business. Now, this is something that comes up. This does come up more often with me probably than any of my predecessors, because I tend to be a little bit more entrepreneurial than my predecessors. But for example, I was explaining Woodneath Press to a guy who runs a small printing shop, and he said, you know, I'm not really sure how I feel about this. I mean, it feels like you might be competing directly with me in the stuff that I do. And I said, no, not really. And I started explaining to him exactly every, you know, first of all, the program, the fact that the press is sort of like a happy outcome, a sort of a positive residual side effect. But the real idea of Woodneath Press is to get people to build a community and to build these skills. And he goes, yeah, I'm not doing it. I don't want to do anything like that. And so once he saw it, he said, yeah, I can see that you're not competing with us and with me. And so that's something that's really important to me too. I mean, I think a strong economy will help to ensure that we have a strong operating levy. And I think the worst thing you can do is start shooting yourself in the foot by kicking off the business community in something like that. So it's not just cooperating with our library partners, but it's cooperating with our business community too.
So creation of the Mid-Continent Public Library Service in 1965, were there any growing pains associated with that, differences among the various counties and whatnot? And what led to the consolidation aspect in 1978?
You know, like I said, all of this predates the Sunshine Law and the open records laws in Missouri. And so a lot of the recording is sketchy at best. A lot of the recording is also, or a lot of my story is based on an oral tradition, sitting down and talking with people and then them remembering how things were. So it's kind of secondhand. And, you know, as a historian, I'm always a little dubious of that. The other thing I should say too, is that I should have said this up front, is that while I did spend a lot of time listening to people and listening to their stories, when I was working on my library degree, I actually did a research paper with a friend of mine who was also in library school on the impact of consolidation. And basically what we did is we went to Mid-Continent and we looked at Mid-Continent had brought in a branch in 1981, and this was in 1991. So basically what we did is we went into Mid-Continent's archives and tried to figure out the positive effect of consolidation. You know, was it a good thing for these people? Was it a bad thing? And so over that time period, while I was working on that research paper, Mr. Ferguson and, you know, all the people at Mid-Continent basically gave me full access to the archives. And so this is where I found speeches by Jim Leathers talking about arbitrary political lines and reading all of those things. So I spent many hours reading through the archives as part of this library school project. I also got to interview John Ferguson and Tom Lane. He was our business manager and comptroller. Lowell Pauley, who was the original, he was called South Area Administrator was his title, but it's what became the South Regional Manager and then the South Associate Director for Public Services, Associate Director for Public Services. We changed job titles a couple of times, but Mr. Pauley was here through that entire time period. And so we were able to interview a lot of people around this. And that's where a lot of my history for this comes, either listening to people or interviewing them or going through the archives. So as I was looking through the history, it did become clear, and also talking to people like Tom Lane, it became really clear that this handshake arrangement that they had with the other counties was not very, it wasn't strong enough. basically what could happen, and actually this, what I'm about to describe did just happen about a decade ago up in St. Joe, is what could happen at any board meeting is the people from one county or another could come in and say, I don't like this arrangement anymore. I move that our county leave. And all they'd have to do is get a majority vote and there you go, you're done. And so it's pretty hard to do planning, realizing that at any time, 1/4 of your entity could just walk away. It's pretty hard to do anything on a strong financial basis. If you want to build buildings, if you want to create a levy, because each county has their own levy. I mean, at that time, there wasn't a Mid-Continent levy. There was a Clay County and a Jackson County and a Cass County and a Platte County levy. And technically, there was also, at each board meeting, there was a Platte County, Clay County, Jackson County, and Cass County Library Board meeting. And then there was sort of like an oversight board. So each time they did something big, like setting a levy or having an audit or something like that, they did it 5 times. And so it was not at all efficient.
Right. And if one of those fails or
right.
can't agree, then
it's
a
drawing board.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, or, you know, 3/4 moves forward in this way and the other 4 stays back, and then you have inequality of service, yeah. which isn't a good thing. And then that just plays into the whole bias that everybody has around something like larger units of service, which is, you know, if Cass County joins us, all of our money is just going to go up to Jackson County and we'll be left behind. Well, you know, they vote to be left behind. You know, that's a technicality. The voters won't see that. All they'll see is that their libraries aren't as good, and the people in Jackson County seem to have everything, and they'll blame that on the fact of sort of piracy, legalized piracy. And so, I mean, it was really unstable and inefficient under the regional, you know, service model. And real early on, I think Jim Leather saw that, and he started working on creating the new library type, the consolidated library district. I think he got this idea. There were several of these consolidated library district laws in the East where I think he came from New York before he came from here. And there was some precedence of having those back there. So he started working on this. And really, this was before MLA had a lobbyist. It was before any of this. And Jefferson City was a very different place in the late 1960s and early 70s. It's a madhouse right now, but it was just crazy back then. And so what ends up happening is that Leathers ends up going down there, essentially staying in Jeff City, opening to close of session year after year after year, lobbying and advocating for the creation of the Consolidated Library Bill. And meanwhile, John Ferguson is back here essentially as the assistant director, chief operating officer, running everything and trying to hold everything together. And so it was a really, really interesting time in terms of development for the library. But they immediately saw, I mean, right after consolidation in 65, or not consolidation, but right after the regional and creation of the service, they immediately saw they had to get this a lot more solid and a lot better in terms of this. And so I think Leather's real push, if I'm not mistaken, started around 67, 68 or something like that. And I think the consolidated law occurred in 73, I want to say, something early 70s, I think. It took a long time for the consolidated law to occur. And then
it says 1971 here.
Okay.
On the history.
I'll take 71. That's about, well,
you're very close.
I do know what happened in 73, though. So in 1973, the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs came, merged into Mid-Continent, and North Independence moved off the square and moved to 24 Highway in Spring, where they are now. So that number wasn't just pulled out of thin air. I knew that there were important things that happened that year. But I think what ended up happening after the consolidation law, then Leathers had to come back and try to convince everybody to come on board. Between the establishment of the counties and the establishment of the consolidated law, the levies had got out of whack. I mean, one of the things that you have to do in order for a consolidated library district to occur is everybody has to be under the same levy, because once you actually merge, then you become one district and you are under the same levy. And so the next thing that they did is they were running into some financial issues in terms of being hard to make ends meet. I think at that point, I think Clay County may have had a slightly higher levy than Platt. I think Clay and Jackson had the same levy, but Platt was still a little low and Cass was low. And so they started working on raising their levies, and they worked and worked and worked. They got Platt. Then they started working on raising Cass's levy, and Cass ended up with those same concerns. If we do this, if we join in, then, you know, we're going to, all of our money will go to Jackson County and they'll steal all of our money and everything will be terrible. You know, they kept saying no. And actually at this point, this is actually a story that Lowell Pauley had told me, is that, cause he was laying out this story for me and Bren, the researcher that I was working with on the paper. And, he said that, Mr. Leathers went down and he was, advocating and giving speeches and going all over the place. But Leathers sort of had a little bit of a New York swagger to him. And even today, Cass County is a little bit more rural, a little bit more laid back.
It really was.
And back then, even more so. And so there was a little bit of a culture clash, is what Lowell Pauley said. And so when everything happened, they got the levy passed. But right after they got the levy passed, they voted to leave the Mid-Continent Public Library service.
So they were part of the service.
Yeah.
And then decided to leave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they decided to leave after the people in Jackson, Clay, and Platt County helped them raise their levy. The other interesting thing that I'll say is this is not unusual. The library district in St. Joe that imploded also imploded shortly after they raised their levy. You know, it's almost, you know, the seeking of money is the root of all evil or something. And so once they actually get the money, new problems come and new jealousies. And then all of a sudden it can kind of fall apart. So yeah, they left. It was right around 1976, as I recall. And the story that Mr. Pauley told, because we just asked him point blank, you know, based on how he had described Mr. Leathers, and I'd never met him, and based on what we read about him, and based on what we knew of Mr. Ferguson, who is a very soft-spoken, very humble person, he routinely used to, if you'd ask him a question, usually the first thing he'd do is look down at his feet. It was just one of his character traits, you know, and then he'd look up and start talking. He's almost always taking sort of a humble position. And so, and he was also from Southwest Missouri, so he kind of had a little bit of a drawl. And so we're saying, you know, if Ferguson would have led the charge on that instead of Leathers, what would have happened? And, you know, Mr. Pauley thought a lot about that because those were his branches. He was South Region. He lost those branches. And he said, you know, the chance they would have stayed, because it really was just a personality culture clash sort of thing. And the thing that we also asked him point blank was, you know, what did he feel the impact was of them leaving? And he said, well, you know, if you go back and go down and look at their libraries were sort of stuck in, you know, maybe 1978, 1980. And keep in mind, we were interviewing him in 1990. So I mean, a whole decade, no automation, lots of old books, you know, old furniture. And by that time, we'd, of course, done our building program. You know, all of our libraries had carpet. We owned all of our libraries. We had automated systems. And so yeah, I mean, there was a real big impact, at least from his perspective, on the loss of Cass. Now, you know, since then, we've worked really hard, just like we work really hard with Kansas City Public, to lower as many barriers as possible, to have reciprocal borrowing, to do everything that we can to lessen the impact of the fact that those folks aren't actually in our library district, however many of them work in our library district or go to school in our library district at Longview Community College or something. So we've worked really hard toward addressing that. So by that point, that 76 or so, Cass is gone. The other thing that happens in the late 1970s is you get the full impact of stagflation with growing inflation, where and interest rates are up around 20%, and we're starting to see a little bit of the Rust Belt and unemployment. And there was a pretty serious recession, with the exception of the Great Recession that we just went through. This was probably the other big one after the Great Depression. And I actually grew up during that time period. I kind of remember that. I mean, I remember parents being afraid of losing their jobs and things like that. And things were really, really tight during that time period. So what ends up happening is there's a couple of interesting things occur. One thing that occurs just before that, in 1973, again, because of economic issues, the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs comes into Mid-Continent. And the way that happens is changes in healthcare policy, in many ways, is what really forced this issue. Things like mineral water baths and massages and spa treatments and things like that were typically covered under insurance policies in the 1950s and 1960s.
Wow.
Yeah.
Literally never heard
going
of that.
Back in
right.
time.
And so,
sounds like fun.
And so the thing is that no, Excelsior Springs was a community that was built on, it was a resort town. I mean, as weird as that sounds, it was a resort town for what they considered resorts in the 1950s. And
that's more like blue collar.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
It was. I mean, you know, the Chicago Cubs, little bit of trivia, the Chicago Cubs, one of their first spring training homes was Excelsior Springs. And they would come to Excelsior Springs and go to the spas and get ready to play the games.
They won a World Series.
And back then they would have won the World Series too, because it would have been the early 1900s.
The name sounds very resorty.
Right. Yeah. And it was. It was all of that. It's really hard for us to envision today, but it was. That the change in the healthcare policy, what it ended up doing is closing down the last of the mineral water springs and spas and all those closed up. And that was sort of the core of what Excelsior Springs' economy was built on back then. And so because of that, you know, the money just sort of shriveled up. They're a one-horse town and their horse left. And so they started looking to do anything they could to bring in new business to the town. And they also started looking to shed expenses. And so there was this brand new Clay County Library that had just been developed just a few years earlier. And so they started looking into it and they said, hey, it, you know, looks to us like we can just seed operations to this new county library. And so that's what they did. It was probably one of the easiest mergers of all time, because they couldn't afford to do it anymore. And so they just said, okay, we're out, we're done. And Clay County took over the Carnegie Library of Excelsior Springs. And that was 1973. And then the other thing that, you know, as we started moving forward in time, with the stagflation and the recession of the late 70s, the Frank Hughes Library in Liberty was operating, and it was operating as a municipal library and operating pretty well. But this was the library that we were researching in our paper. By the late 1970s, they were having problems making ends meet. Their building had been built, I think, 1936. They had all kinds of construction issues that they need. You know, they needed a new roof, and they didn't have adequate parking, and they didn't have adequate space, and you know, they didn't have an easy way for people to get downstairs. They had stairs, but, you know, no elevators or anything like that. So it came down to Jane Benson, the library director there. She and I talked on several occasions when we were writing the paper, and she said, what ended up happening is we had a choice that we could choose to raise our levy. We could go out and raise our levy. And if we did that, then we would be able to afford to fix our roof or buy books or pay our staff or pay into retirement or
getting paid.
Right. They remember the two library networks for interlibrary loan services. So they had kind of a very small collection. And so if they wanted to actually get the books that people wanted, they joined these two interlibrary loan networks. They wouldn't be able to afford to join either network. So even with raising the levy, they wouldn't be able to do all those things. So my understanding is they approached Mid-Continent about the idea of a merger. And this was the first, this is the first real merger that occurred. I mean, because there were people who weren't necessarily for it. Some people who were, you know, definitely for it, and a little contentious. But eventually, you know, once they kind of laid it all out and said, you know, either we do this or pretty much we don't operate anymore. We're going to have to close up shop. Basically, what the library board did is they voted themselves out of existence. And when they voted themselves out of existence, because there was a Clay County Library, it just took over that area. Actually, Mid-Continent, the Consolidated Library District existed at that point. So same difference, though, really. And so one of the first things we did is we got them a new location. And what was really interesting is then the first year of operation, I'm trying to remember what it was. I think the first year of operation, they something like doubled their circulation in the new location. And then every year after that, the old location, because we, by law or by agreement, we had to keep the old location open. So Liberty had two buildings until 1991. That old location continued to sort of halve its circulation until at the very end, it circulated just a bit over 100 items in a year. Which really didn't make any sense to keep that open any longer. Right.
Once every few days.
Right. And so that's how Liberty came on board with us. The other library that came on board with us during these early phases and before the building project was Lone Jack. And interesting stories around Lone Jack. It's, you know, kind of a bit out there. There wasn't anywhere easily to gain access to library services back then. I mean, 50 Highway was a 2-lane road. Lee Summit still wasn't, you know, Lee Summit it is today. It was, you know, and so it was kind of hard to get services. And some of the people in the community thought we should get a library. I think they approached Mid-Continent. First of all, the first group that approached Mid-Continent approached them in probably not the best political way to approach an entity. Basically, they said, we want a library. We want you to give us money and we'll run the library. And
said, sure, why not?
And that didn't go over real well for whatever reason. But the people at Mid-Continent had heard. I mean, basically, they'd heard the people in, you know, southeastern Jackson County are interested in library service. And so they started working, the administration of Mid-Continent started working on creating a Lone Jack library service, a Lone Jack branch. And so one of the first things that they did is, you know, back then Lone Jack was, I mean, Lone Jack's still not really huge, but I mean, it was really small back then. I mean, it was, you know, a few hundred people. There wasn't a lot of commercial storefronts. I mean, this is the SOP for Mid-Continent. When Mid-Continent would start a new library back in the, you know, before the mid 1980s or late 1980s, what it would do is it would find a commercial strip mall. It would rent out part of that strip mall storefront, and that would be the library for a while. And then you'd move to a bigger spot, you know, once you sort of outgrew your space. But there were no strip malls in Lone Jack. And there wasn't a lot of commercial real estate even in Lone Jack in those days. So back then, St. Louis County used to have a fleet of bookmobiles and bookmobile trailers. The library director there, Don Gertner, who is still alive and a great guy, Don and John Ferguson were really, really good friends in terms of, you know, sort of comrades in arms. They were partners in crime back then. So Mr. Ferguson contacted Don to see if they could borrow a bookmobile trailer. And that's what they did. They borrowed a bookmobile trailer and they put it in the parking lot of, I think, across from City Hall or next to City Hall or something like that. And it was a trailer as opposed to the bookmobile that's like an RV. And so they put it there and they set it up. And of course, you know, when you set up a trailer like that, like a mobile home, not as big as a mobile home, but when you set up a trailer like that, you know, you put it up on blocks and you level it, you know, so that when you're sitting down in a chair in there, you don't roll to the other side. And so they did that. They got it all level. I think after the first couple of nights that it was up, you know, the librarian came out the next day and found that the library had been pushed off its blocks. And you know, some of these folks who wanted a library, but really just wanted a library so they could run the library were still making their voice heard. It still wasn't particularly easy for the person. I mean, even once they got people to stop pushing the library off its blocks, this was a trailer and it had no facilities in it. And so what she had to do is, I mean, she was close to what I think was the commercial center of Lone Jack back then. And, you know, she'd go in to a restaurant and asked to use the restroom, they wouldn't let her. And so she had to always like order something to drink in order to use the restroom, which was, you know, just not very cooperative.
Less than ideal.
Less than ideal, sure. And so so eventually somebody did build some speculative office space in Lone Jack. And we immediately raised our hand as, you know, as soon as we saw the shovel go in the dirt, it's like, hey, we'd like to buy some space from you, you know? And so we did. And, we actually rented that space and then eventually, bought the space outright. And, it is, if you go to Lone Jack, our Lone Jack branch is, you know, where it is. And then the building next to it is the post office. And the building next to that is the police department. The police department building was our old building at Lone Jack after we moved out of the trailers. But I think by that particular time, we started realizing that we needed to, well, first of all, we were having all kinds of problems in terms of finance. The stagflation was killing us. And we hadn't raised the levy since, you know, back in the early 70s, late 60s. And so, you know, back then, back in the late 60s, early 70s. I mean, that's when my parents bought their house in Independence. And it was, I think it was like $10,000. It was a three bedroom house with bathroom and, you know, passable house. I mean, it still wouldn't be a bad house today. It's $10,000. You know, by that time, because of inflation and everything, your average three-bedroom house was, you know, more like $60,000-$70,000. So inflation had really, really played havoc with the housing market, and we weren't keeping up because our levy was so low. So that's when they started looking at increasing our operating levy, and the radical notion for this library system, at least, of building our own libraries and owning our own building stock.
Can I ask really quick, why is it Consolidated Library District number 3 instead of 1 or 2? Or
as opposed to 1, yeah. Considering our library director nearly drank himself and worked himself into a grave to get the law passed? It's a good question. It still is ultimately about politics. Even though Jim Leathers knew this was the right thing to do, even though most of the board knew it was the right thing to do, once the bill passed, you still had to, well, one thing, you had to make sure that everybody's levy was the same, and that Platt and Cass County's levy weren't the same as Jackson and Clay's, number one. And then, so it's going to take time to get the levy, you know, get all the work together and get the levy raised and get it equalized. The second thing that happened is just pure politics. I mean, you've got to get everybody to agree. And so they worked to get everything equalized. And then lost Cass County. And then they started working to get everybody to agree. And my recollection, if I remember right, is that Jackson and Clay consolidated first. And you could continue to operate like that. In fact, that's the way St. Joe operated like that for a long time, where they were a consolidated library district and part of their district, and a city library district in the other part of the district. And they operated like that for a good long time. We could have continued to operate with Jackson and Clay together and then Platt just sort of hanging out there on the side. But again, they could have left at any time. And we didn't want that. I mean, you know, we had the airport there. There was lots of grand designs for people to, you know, build in Platt County. And a lot of those are starting to come true now. But I mean, they really thought that was going to happen in the early 70s. So we continued to work to get Platt up to where they needed to be, to get their levy equalized, and to make sure that they understood that, you know, you do want to be part of us. I mean, my speculation is that there may have been a faction on the Platt County Board that probably thought, we can do this by ourselves. We have an international airport now. I mean, we can, you know, we're going to be the next big growth area. And that's my guess, is that there may have been that, you know, a couple of people who may have thought that, and they had to keep convincing them, no, it's better to be part of a bigger team, you know, and all of that. And that's pure speculation on my behalf, but that would make sense to me. And so by the time they got all the ducks in a row and got everybody together, two other libraries had snuck in before us. Consolidated Library District number 1 is the Barry Lawrence Library District, which is down there, sort of south and west of Springfield. And they were the first one to get in. So.